He was a friend, a mentor to me. He was a statesman, and really sad to see him go.
Anchorage Democrat Representative Max Gruenberg has died. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Hugh Neff wins the Yukon Quest.
I don't know if there's ever been a dog before that has won the quest and then come back and won the quest again 4 years later, but that's what my leader up there, George, did.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
The Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
Love Alaska's fish? Consider supporting healthy fisheries and the Alaska Marine Conservation Council when filing for the 2016 PFD through the Pick, Click, Give program. This message sponsored by the AMCC.
Longtime Representative Max Gruenberg died yesterday in Juneau. The Anchorage Democrat was 72 years old. Gruenberg had bipartisan respect for his skill in crafting legislation. He was the senior member of the House. He served during two separate periods, from 1985 to 1992, and then again starting in 2003. Gruenberg was born and raised in San Francisco. He served in the U.S. Navy in Vietnam. A retired family lawyer, Gruenberg sponsored the law that provides silver alerts to locate missing vulnerable adults. Another Gruenberg law requires the removal of asbestos from schools and public buildings. Fellow Democrat Anchorage Senator Bill Willikowski says he and Gruenberg represented East Anchorage together for nearly a decade. Willikowski says Max Gruenberg was a friend and a mentor, and he is saddened at his passing.
Max was a consummate statesman. He didn't view party lines. He worked across with Republicans, Democrats, and his fingerprints are all over so many pieces of legislation. He had a reputation of looking things over with a fine-tooth comb and making bills better.
Max Gruenberg served twice as the House Majority Leader. He was the Minority Whip in the current session. House Speaker Mike Chenault, a Nikiski Republican, says Representative Gruenberg often worked quietly behind the scenes rather than in the spotlight to get things done.
If he had an idea for a bill and maybe he didn't think that it would pass if it was under his name, he would work with others across the party to find someone to help him with it, and he'd do all the legwork, he'd do all the background info, and at the end of the day, Max was about crafting a good piece of legislation that worked for Alaskans.
Governor Bill Walker ordered flags to be lowered to half staff for both Gruenberg and U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, who died on Saturday. The flags will remain at half staff until Justice Scalia is laid to rest. Governor Walker said Max Gruenberg's death is a significant loss for all of Alaska. Anchorage Democrats will submit three potential replacements to Governor Walker, who will choose one. House Democrats can then accept or reject that choice. Hugh Neff has won the 2016 Yukon Quest. The Alaska musher finished in Whitehorse around 2:30 p.m. today after starting in Fairbanks 9 days ago. KUAC's Molly Reddick has more.
There was a pause in the cheering as Hugh Neff's dogs got tangled in the crowd on his way into the chute in Whitehorse. Then he ran across the finish line as the 2016 Yukon Quest champion. Along with hundreds of fans, Dawson Dolly was waiting for him, dressed in a bedazzled gown and a large feathered hat. She sang a ballad for the winning musher.
Champion of the Yukon Quest.
Neff hugged his lead dog, George Costanza.
I don't know if there's ever been a dog before that has won the quest and then come back and won the quest again 4 years later, but that's what my leader up there, George, did.
The Toke musher climbed the podium and told the crowd about his race. This was his 16th Yukon Quest and his second victory. In 2012, he came from behind and beat Alan Moore by 26 seconds. He said he had proven something this year.
I wanted to prove to people that it was more than just luck that I could do it once. Personally, I think I should have won this race five or six times by now. So I think I put that baby to bed.
Ness said the stars had aligned for him this year.
I've never had a team like this before, and all the racing I've done that has eaten and drank and perfectly at every checkpoint. It's like a former Quest champ, Jeff King, says, if you win, usually it's easy. And I really felt this year like everything just came easily to me.
Brent Sass came in second on wobbly legs, saying it was the hardest race of his life. Still, he said, he loved every mile.
Highlights, I enjoyed every minute of it when it comes right down to it. This is what I love to do, and I'm really fortunate that I get to do it.
On the Yukon Quest Trail in Whitehorse, I'm Molly Reddig.
Hugh Neff took the fifth place spot last year. Yukon resident Ed Hopkins, one of five Canadian competitors, was in fifth place at the halfway point and remained solidly in that position. Contestants have been challenged by blizzards, equipment troubles, and sick dogs throughout the grueling race. The top 10 finishers will split a $115,000 prize, and Neff will take home about $35,000. U.S. Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz is part of a group of state and federal officials who are in Bethel today to discuss rural energy needs. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski is holding a field hearing of the U.S. Senate Energy Committee, which she chairs. The hearing is focused on alternative energy projects throughout the state, as well as the continuing challenge of high rural energy costs. Alaska Public Media's energy reporter, Rachel Waldholtz, is also in Bethel to report on today's hearing and joins me now. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Lori.
So who is listening along with Senator Murkowski and who will be testifying?
Well, in addition to Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz, Murkowski is accompanied by several members of the Senate Energy Committee on this trip. So she has Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington, who's the ranking Democrat on the Energy Committee and who worked with Murkowski on the energy bill that's currently before the Senate. So Cantwell is here, as well as several other members, including Senators Steve Daines of Montana, John Barrasso of Wyoming, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, and Senator Angus King of Maine. So they will all be here listening to testimony today.
And who will be testifying? Is that known?
Yeah, so there's quite a panel of testifiers set up. Actually, Energy Secretary Moniz will be testifying first, and he'll be followed by Governor Bill Walker, who's here, along with Bethel Representative Bob Herron. And then there are also several representatives of Alaska organizations, both from here in the YK Delta and involved in energy issues across the state. So there's representatives from the Alaska Center for Energy and Power at UAF and the Cold Climate Housing Research Center and ANTHC, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, as well as the Association of Village Council Presidents and the Alaska Village Electrical Cooperative. And they will all be speaking to the senators as well.
Rachel, the high cost and challenge of providing energy to remote communities in Alaska is not new. So why is this field hearing happening now?
Yeah, well, actually, Senator Murkowski is she's sort of aiming for a more upbeat tone other than just sort of the high cost of electricity and heating in rural Alaska. She really wants to point out some of the like innovative energy projects that are happening across the state, especially in small villages right now. Alaska has really become a leader in microgrids, which is sort of small grids that are separated from a larger grid. And actually, there's a series of villages just outside Bethel at the mouth of the Kuskokwim that are pioneering wind diesel systems that actually inspired a section of her energy bill. And so I think she wanted to bring senators out here, not just to see sort of the challenges of high energy costs, but also she wants to get the word out about what Alaska villages are doing with renewable power and with microgrid systems that maybe the rest of the country could learn from.
Senator Murkowski and her group went to Oscarville, a community just right near Bethel, and you accompanied or went along on that visit to Oscarville. Why that community? Why did they go there?
Yeah, I'm actually speaking to you from Oscarville right now. And Oscarville has been chosen as a pilot program by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center to sort of look at holistic planning for a community. So they're looking at energy needs, water and sewer needs, economic development and education, and sort of trying to tackle it all at once. And so Oscarville is the first community that they're doing this sort of holistic planning for. And it's also very close to Bethel. And I think Murkowski really wanted the other senators to sort of see what life is like in a small Alaska village.
All right. Thanks so much for that update, Rachel.
Yeah. Thanks, Lori.
That was Alaska Public Media's energy reporter, Rachel Waldholtz, speaking to us from Oscarville near Bethel. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an award for a UAF scientist.
An occasional year or even a decade of what we might call a trend reversal, say a cooling climate, does not change the big picture.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're looking for a career that will put you to work immediately without any educational debt, think about the apprenticeship program and learn to become a construction craft laborer. The construction industry requires hard work, provides great pay, and a bright future while building Alaska. Application deadline for the apprenticeship program is March 31st. Call to begin your debt-free career track today, 907-345-3853. This message sponsored by Alaska Laborers Training School.
A University of Alaska Fairbanks scientist is receiving the recognition of his peers. Dr. John Walsh recently garnered a medal from the International Arctic Science Committee. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, the prestigious award recognizes Walsh's sustained work in the far north.
John Walsh is chief scientist at UAF's International Arctic Research Center. He says he was originally drawn to the far north in the late 1960s when he heard about studies on tankers planned to transport North Slope oil. In the more than 40-odd years since then, he's seen interest in the Arctic wax and wane with geopolitics. It's on the rise today.
The different types of interests have come together to make for a more thriving research field to be in. The negative is that the Arctic environment has new risks.
Climate change is such a risk. Walsh says if he could convey one point about climate change to people, it's you have to take the long view.
An occasional year or even a decade of what we might call a trend reversal, say a cooling climate, does not change the big picture.
The International Arctic Research Committee cited Walsh for his exceptional and sustained contributions to understanding the Arctic. He's gratified by the recognition of his peers, but he says his wife had a more practical reaction to the news.
Does this medal come with any money?
He had to break it to her. It didn't. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The Bethel Fire Department is asking the city to fund two extra positions after seeing a surge in alcohol-related calls. The department is straining to respond to the influx, and with legal alcohol sales coming to Bethel, it expects those numbers to rise. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
Since Bethel went wet in 2009, the number of alcohol-related calls has increased more than 100%. Overall call volume has also climbed. Since 2014, over half the department's calls have been related to alcohol. Despite the increase, the Bethel Fire Department has stayed at early 1990s staffing levels of 6 firefighters. It also has more than 30 volunteers. Meanwhile, Bethel's population has been growing. According to the U.S. Census, in 1990, Bethel had over 4,500 people. A decade later, that number tops 6,000.
We're currently operating with the absolute minimum to handle the volume of calls that we've currently got.
That's Fire Chief Bill Howell. The National Fire Protection Association mandates at least 3 firefighters per engine responding to a fire. Howell says the department works hard to have 2 staff and 1 volunteer per truck. Usually 1 firefighter at a time is on duty. The second firefighter and volunteer often meet the truck at the scene. The crew also regularly assists the short-staffed police department. There's no janitorial or administrative help, and Howell says overtime runs high.
When firefighters have to work 48 and 72 hours in a row to cover for people taking vacations and having to constantly go on calls on their days off to help cover staffing needs, I think it's a pretty safe assessment that they're being taxed further than what they should.
Despite the difficulties, Howell says morale is good. He says the staff is mostly new and young, so they may be more resilient. But to prevent burnout and to respond to rising calls, Howell is asking the city to fund 2 more staff positions.
We feel that there's a strong possibility that a package store in Bethel could increase our call volumes. and we'd like to upstaff in anticipation of that.
Howell says the city could fund the positions with savings from reduced overtime and tax revenue from future alcohol sales. He says the department has already been recruiting.
We have several qualified applicants already on deck. We're ready to go as soon as we can get approval from the manager and council.
At Tuesday's city council meeting, the Public Safety and Transportation Commission recommended the council fund the positions. The council will address the matter at a later meeting. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Full Circle, delivering organic produce and artisan groceries, including Alaskan products, across Alaska. Learn more about Full Circle's partner producers at fullcircle.com/APRN.
The Elder Mentor Program brings the wisdom of Alaskan elders into the classrooms and the communities across the state. Elders age 55 and older share their compassion, social support, and cultural values with the next generation. Earn a small stipend while supporting the educational staff and children. Alaska's Elder Mentors serve through the National Senior Corps Program. Mentor information at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
Last week at the Dena'ina Convention Center in Anchorage, EPA officials presented an award to the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium for its Local Environmental Observer, or LEO, program. As KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports, LEO managers used the occasion to launch a new app for the LEO website.
LEO program director Mike Brubaker led the countdown to launch.
Three, two, one.
Launch.
Okay, now we have to make a rumbling noise because the rock's gonna. It was supposed to be in there. There it is.
Moses Chernikov is a geographer for the LEO Network. He says some 20,000 people have visited the website's interactive map over the past few years. The map is linked to photos, videos, and short reports on unusual or unique environmental events.
It could be weather-related, erosion, for example, or invasive species from large animals to insects.
Local environmental observers have been using computers to post information. Brubaker says the new app allows them to post by smartphone and automatically adds GPS and time data. Experts at federal, state, or tribal agencies or in academia then can comment or answer questions.
What we've tried to do is to build a system that is transparent and responsive, and actually connects people one-to-one with people that are topic experts.
Brubaker says LEO can help bring attention to important issues.
If someone posted in one community, they may find out quickly that it's not just themselves, but there's someone upstream, downstream, upcoast, downcoast, somewhere else who may be experiencing the same thing. And then you've got not just an isolated event, you have a broader event happening, which can help garner resources and develop partnerships and hopefully lead to answers.
LEO can also help people prepare for or adapt to climate change effects. For instance, Brubaker says Alaska Department of Fish and Game veterinarians have documented the first sightings of mule deer in interior Alaska. Brubaker says a new food source is welcome, but mule deer can also carry winter ticks, which often suck the life out of their host as they feed on its blood.
If winter tick is introduced to our moose population or our caribou population, it has implications for that wildlife resource and for subsistence and maybe even other species. So when we hear something like that, we put out an alert to the network and ask people and give them guidance on how they can observe for emerging threats.
The Environmental Protection Agency is a major funder of LEO. EPA Region 10 Administrator Dennis McLaren presented the consortium with an award for innovation, saying they're breaking new ground in citizen science.
We know people back in D.C. are looking at this. We know that it's really an innovation that's going to take off like crazy.
LEO is already being used as a model by two committees of the Eight Nation Arctic Council. They're creating a circumpolar local environmental observer network called CLEO. The Finnish Ministry of Environment plans to host CLEO training at the Sami Cultural Center of Finland. And U.S. regulators are working with Canadians to expand CLEO across North America. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Ketchikan's Women in Safe Homes, or WISH, has been on probation since last fall after a site visit by the State Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault found the emergency shelter out of compliance with various regulations. WISH officials, though, say there was no warning from the State Council that there were any problems. In fact, just a few months prior, the shelter had received notice of compliance, praising the program for following regulations. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
In summer of 2015, a representative of the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault conducted a site visit of Ketchikan's emergency shelter. Women in Safe Homes board member Joel Jackson says that representative also attended a WISH board meeting.
At that board meeting, several members of the board asked if they had any questions or concerns or anything they want to share with us, and they did not.
In fact, a letter from CDVSA dated June 4th announces that the WISH program complied with all regulations. It states that, quote, the review of your submitted policies and procedures reveals that WISH is operating in a professional and responsible manner, providing a high level of quality service to residents in the Ketchikan community and surrounding areas, end quote. About 3 months later, WISH was placed on probation by CDVSA for not following policies and procedures. So what happened in those 3 months? Jackson says the board has asked that question too, and received no clear answer. CDVSA Executive Director Lori Morton did not respond directly to requests for an interview for this report. She instead emailed a statement through Alaska State Troopers spokeswoman Beth Ibsen. In the statement, Morton writes that the agencies are working together to get WISH into compliance. The September site visit report from CDVSA notes procedural issues such as excluding clients who are under the influence, a lack of cooperation with other local service agencies, a violation of record-keeping regulations, and a lack of training for board and staff. WISH board chair Carla Reinhart says that WISH disagrees with findings in the report.
And we did try to appeal, and we were told we could not appeal. And we feel like we were not given, either the board or the staff members were not given the opportunity to address the concerns. And if we could have had open dialogue from the beginning, a lot of this could have been avoided.
But with CDVSA holding some large purse strings, WISH has little choice but to work through remediation steps that the State Council has laid out, such as establishing a planning process, improving training procedures, establishing operating agreements with other service agencies, and following a grievance process for employees who've been let go. Jackson says many of those steps have been accomplished. Some were done before WISH was put on probation. The planning process, for example, took place last spring with assistance from a 4-acre group expert.
And that happened before they even wrote this out as a problem. And so that's why it's really, you know, it's hard to understand where this came from, because that information was available to CDVSA in advance of this report.
Among the issues noted in the documents is a practice at WISH of excluding people if they're under the influence of alcohol or other substances. The CDVSA report states that people in a domestic violence situation often have co-concurring conditions, including substance abuse and behavioral health issues. According to the State Council, such conditions should not be used as a reason to keep people out of a shelter. WISH board member Jamie Palmer says that Ketchikan's shelter does not reject people because they're under the influence of alcohol or drugs. She says advocates who notice a client is somewhat inebriated will counsel the client and assess their condition.
And if the advocate deems they're okay and safe to stay, then they would be able to stay in the front of the shelter.
Those clients can go into the main part of the shelter after they're completely sober. people under the influence to a level that they're a danger to themselves or others are referred elsewhere, either to the hospital or law enforcement. But Palmer says when they are able to safely return to the shelter, they will be allowed in. Palmer admits that there was a time period when an employee interpreted the policies incorrectly.
We had a new shelter manager fresh out the gate, and she needed that training, and she took it in her own way, and she's no longer working there. Okay. So she was let go pretty quickly after those things were brought to light.
During the 9-month probationary period, which lasts through June, women in safe homes will continue to get funding from CDVSA, but it's through a monthly reimbursement. Jackson says that's been challenging for the nonprofit agency.
As a small agency with limited resources, that makes it very difficult to operate. It also, as some have pointed out, puts at jeopardy other funding, because other funders will look at that and go, why are you on probation?
That's exactly what happened at a recent Ketchikan City Council meeting. The council approved a list of grants to local nonprofit agencies, but delayed the $16,500 grant to WISH, citing its probationary status. WISH officials do plan to attend the next city council meeting to give a presentation and answer any questions about the shelter's program policies and procedures. Jackson says the WISH board hopes to be taken off of probation sooner than the 9-month time frame set by CDVSA, so that shelter officials can put their time and energy toward other projects.
WISH is trying very hard to raise money for a new shelter and has other things that we need to work on, and this is taking an inordinate amount of staff time and obviously the board's time as well to address, and the fact that we're talking to you when we could be talking about fundraising events that we're doing and things that are more positive.
WISH serves southern Southeast Alaska, providing emergency shelter for people in Ketchikan, Saxman, Metlakatla, and Prince of Wales Island, and it also takes clients from Wrangell and Petersburg. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz in Oscarville, Molly Reddick in Whitehorse, Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, and Layla Carey in Ketchikan. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco, and it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.